Huge gauntlets hung at waist height, permanently clenched into fists. Black slots were cut out of the knuckles, matching the tangs of an arsenal of weapons still half-forged and propped against one of the thick wooden beams that supported the huge slate roof. Axes, swords, pike heads. Helms topped the giant suits of armor, slumped forward, and Helwas thought they looked like ghostly warriors, heads bowed in prayer, floating before her on the thick air.
"What do you think, girl?"
Barnard's voice sounded like the metal he worked, dark, deep, booming.
"They're coming together nicely, eh?"
Helwas considered the empty machines, eyes roaming the dark space where a man would fit inside. She imagined the thick metal around her. Who knew what great power the tinker mechanisms would give the wearer?
"They're scary."
Barnard chuckled, crossed his arms under his broad chest.
"To the Emperor's enemies, yes. But the righteous have nothing to fear from them."
Helwas didn't feel frightened now, only curious.
"What are they?"
"War engines. A man inside one of these is as fast as a hound with a scent, as strong as an army, as invulnerable as sainted palatines themselves."
"And you built these for the Emperor?"
"I am building them for the Procurer. I am not so high and mighty that he will tell me what he intends them for, but I imagine they will go to the army, yes."
Helwas pictured the giant metal engine sweeping through a levee line, men flying at the touch of its fists.
"How do they work?"
Barnard laughed. "Not so frightened now, are you? It's heresy enough letting you in here. I'll not compound it by teaching a child to run a war machine."
He turned back to Chunzia, who passed him a sack of candles. "There's a sparking stone and metal in there to light them," she said, then handed him a platter loaded down with bread and cheese. Barnard smiled and draped a water skin over Helwa's shoulder.
"I locked myself in here accidentally once. I was in here half the day before my boys got me out."
"You'll have air enough." The fear returned at the thought of Barnard stepping out, of the great door closing behind him.
"Please," she said in spite of herself. "Can Basina stay with me just for the beginning?"
"I will, father," Basina said.
"I don't mind."
Barnard exchanged a glance with Basina before sighing.
"I am locking a little girl in a dark closet. This monstrous world makes monsters of us all." "All right. But only for a quarter candle, mind me. We risk much as it is."
Basina hugged her father, and Helwas felt such relief that she sat down where she was, back leaning up against the war machine's metal leg.
"You, too, be careful in there," Barnard said. "No playing around. Touch nothing."
Basina rolled her eyes. "I helped you make half of these." Barnard laughed at that, and the sound made Helwas easier.
"May the sainted palatines watch over you both, you jewels. You flowers. I love you."
"Love you, father,"
Basina said, smiling as if being locked in her own vault was as common as breakfast. Barnard laughed again, and the plain bronze door swung shut, slamming home hard enough to make the walls shake, the darkness sending them scrambling for the sack of candles.
Chapter 8. Home Away from Home. From Rit, Leah, Chapter 14, Verse 2. Having set the trades of men, the Emperor ordered their houses. He set the father over his children, that he may make his trade for the glory of the throne, and the wife shall bear him sons, and heed his words, and work his will, as though he were the emperor himself. The candle guttered like hearth fire, casting the same orange-tinted shadows along the walls. Basina sat with her, but they didn't tell stories or share secrets. Instead, they held one another and cried out their anguish over what they'd seen outside Hammerstown. To this, Helwaz added her fear that the Order would come and take her, or her family, that she would never see her mother and father again, and simply being so tired she could no longer stand it. At last, Helwaz had no more tears in her, and she went limp in Basina's arms, not sleeping, but not waking either, her eyes fixed on the flickering candle flame. It felt like just a few moments before Barnard opened the vault door again and Basina stood to go. She gave Helwaz a final hug before going to her father. "Will you be all right, Helwaz?" he asked. "Do you want for anything?" Helwaz had never felt more alone in her life. She glanced at the food and water untouched. There were candles enough to last her a day. Barnard set a chamber pot on the floor, along with a roll of blankets. "We're just outside, remember. If you get frightened or if you need anything, just knock on the door. Even if we don't hear, it'll rouse the dogs, and they'll rouse us. If it's not safe, I'll knock 3 times. If I do that, you're to be as quiet as a mouse. Not a sound, you hear? If I knock only once, that means I'm coming in. Understand?" Helwaz nodded. 3 times for danger, 1 means you're coming in. "Just in case you're using the pot." Barnard smiled, embarrassed. "Anyway, all will be well. Don't be frightened."
"I'm not frightened," Helwaz said, though it wasn't true. "Thank you, Master Tinker."
Barnard leaned in and hugged her around the shoulders. "I'll look in on you soon. If the sentries see nothing on the road after sunset, you can walk under the stars for a bit. All right?"
Helwaz nodded, swallowing tears. She would be brave. Though the devils themselves should surround her, she would be brave.
"Good girl," Barnard said, and shut the vault door.
And though he had been so kind to her, Helwaz felt anger curdling in her belly at those words. She had faced a sojourner. She had stood in a knitting line. How could anyone call her a girl anymore? Helwaz thought of lighting another candle, decided against it. Girls were afraid of the dark. She had seen a village burn. She could do without light. She curled up on the blankets instead, exhausted, and watching the remaining candle flicker defiance at the darkness. Its wick grew shorter and shorter, until at last the darkness took everything. Though whether it was because her eyes had closed, or because the candle had gone out, she couldn't tell. Helwaz woke in darkness, felt her way to the sack, fumbling the spark stone and a fresh candle out. She struck the stone against the bit of metal, showering sparks on the oiled wick until the candle finally caught and chased the shadows into the corners. She squatted over the chamber pot before helping herself to some of the food and water. She had no idea how long she had slept, no way to know how much time had passed other than the candle's life. Who knew how long since it had burned out? She looked around the small room, the chaos and grief of the past day far enough behind her now that she could truly take it in. It no longer seemed so cramped, and there really was no place to hide, which banished fears of monsters hiding in the shadows. She let her eyes range over the metal constructions that lined the racks. Some looked like brass spiders, others like simple scroll tubes or bowls surrounded by pipes. She couldn't tell what they did, or even where one would add the seed stone and water to make them run. She stood
and looked at the war machines hanging on their racks in the middle of the room. They looked smaller now, the candle flame reflecting off the brass edging of the rondels, the silver fittings on the pipes that ran the length of the arms and legs. They looked like metal giants whose chests had been flayed open, the space inside big enough to fit a normal man. Helwaz remembered Barnard's cautioning words, "Touch nothing." For as long as she'd lived, the village folk had whispered of the Tinker Vault, told stories of the wonders hidden behind the bronze door. Now that she stood inside it, Helwaz was disappointed at how plain it all seemed. Nothing beyond her imagination, just tinker engines, much like the ones she'd seen before. Instead of driving an ox cart, this one drove a man to war. But otherwise, it was much the same. Still, she should not touch it. Helwaz sat down and stared, waiting as the time whiled away. She would have to ask Barnard for a copy of the writ. If she was to sit by herself all day, she should at least have something to do, and meditating on the writ was supposed to be the best use of idle time. Or maybe her writing kit. She could write a letter to her father. Maybe Barnard could get it to him, or at least to Sigir. Instead, she stared at the war machines, feeling strangely like they were people. Like she wasn't alone in the vault so long as they were with her. She stood, went to the one that was more complete, letting her fingers run over the leather and metal. Barnard had said she wasn't to touch it, but he only meant it so she wouldn't hurt herself, surely. So long as the weapons weren't attached to the slots in the fist, there was nothing sharp. The machine looked so solid, made mostly of metal. There was nothing a small girl like herself could do to damage it. She glanced at the bronze door, filled with a weird idea that Barnard could somehow see through it. She had nothing to do. He would understand that. No, these engines are commissioned for the Emperor. Even entering the vault is blasphemy, she thought. But if that were the case, then Barnard had blasphemed by hiding her here, and she had blasphemed by defying the order. It all made no sense. The world shouldn't be this way. Villages shouldn't be burned because of the ravings of a simpleton. Ostra shouldn't be murdered because of where she lived. And Helwaz should be allowed to touch a cold, silent metal engine when she meant no harm, when she was trapped in the darkness, idle and alone? What was one more blasphemy? She reached up, setting her hands on the war machine's knees, scrabbling with her toes as she climbed its legs and into the space inside. It was built for a man grown, and her head came up only into the machine's throat, where a heavy metal gorget kept her from seeing out. She leaned her head back and looked up into the helmet. If she were only a tiny bit taller, she would be able to see. The thick smell of oil and leather made her sneeze, and the sound of her breath echoed back from the metal so close to her face. She slid her hands into the arms, as if she were putting on a coat. The leather was coarse against her skin, ending at handles above the gauntlets that she could just brush with her fingertips. Buckles and straps hung from the inside of the limbs and the torso, dangling across her, jingling as she wriggled among them. She was kneeling on a leather-covered ledge above the machine's waist, where a man would probably sit. Even if she was sitting on it, she could see her feet wouldn't quite reach the footrest in the machine's legs below her, leather straps on top of what looked like more leather-covered wooden ledges. It seemed so simple, just like the tinker yoke she'd seen on the oxen. The rods there had driven the beast's legs, lending strength to its movements. If she could reach the straps, and if the engine was powered with seedstone, this would do the same for her limbs. She pressed her arm up against the leather and metal armature, grunted as she strained against it. It didn't budge. It was far too heavy to move without the engine running. She looked down at the stack of weapons, the tangs sharp as the blades themselves, where they would attach to the machine's huge fists. Maybe in one or two more winters she'd be big enough to drive it. Brother Tone would not be so high and mighty then, even with a column of pilgrims at his back. "Stay away from my father," a voice said. It was a moment before she realized that it was her own, that she had been so overcome by the fantasy of driving the machine against the pilgrims that she had spoken aloud. She looked around, embarrassed, but there was no one to hear her inside the vault. She could see a huge canister over her shoulder, bolted to the machine's back, the piping all converging on it, as if it were some giant metal spider. The engine! The seed stone must go in there. A salted cloth sack hung from a rivet beside a metal funnel that led into the canister. She prodded it, felt the seed stone inside. The driver would be able to feed the engine without ever leaving the cage. She turned around, slipping her arms out of the metal sleeves and looking for the lid when a knock sounded at the bronze door. She scrambled, turning around again and dropping down onto the leather-padded ledge. Her legs got tangled in the straps, and she went off balance, her face slamming painfully against the gorget. The machine lurched sickeningly. "Sacred throne, it's going to fall," she thought. "They'll find me tangled up in it if I'm not crushed to death." She froze, waiting for the mechanism to topple over, but the wooden rack was big and heavy, and the machine only rocked gently in place as the tumblers turned and bronze doors shuddered. She scrambled again, desperate to get down before the door was flung wide and Barnard saw her, but the straps tangled about her legs and she was still only halfway to the ground when the door creaked slowly open and light flooded in, borne on a gust of fresh air that blew the candle out. Bettina stood in the doorway, panting. "Did it myself," she grinned as she looked up, leaning against the heavy door. Her eyes widened as she saw Helwa's, and she raced inside, whispering, "What are you doing? Father will skin you!" "Please, don't tell him," Helwa said. "I only wanted to see, and I didn't think I could hurt it." Bettina leaned in, her arms still sweating from the effort of opening the door. She untangled the straps, reaching out a hand to help Helwa's down. "I won't tell him, but you have to promise not to do it again." "There's nothing to do in here," Helwa's said. "Maybe you could leave me a copy of the writ? I could study it when I'm not sleeping."
"Are you so pious?" Bettina asked.
"No," Helwa's admitted, "but I'll go mad otherwise. Do you think you could get my writing kit? I need to spend the time somehow."
Bettina nodded. "I know. I'll see if Father will let me come more often. The Emperor is truly watching over you. If my father hadn't sent me to let you out..."
"Why are you letting me out?"
"It's after supper. Father checked on you twice before, and you were so tired that you slept right through it," Bettina said. "The road's clear. Father says you're to come outside and walk around the house for a bit." Helwa's followed Bettina into the workshop, where the tinkers were working, Barnard and his sons taking turns hammering at a hot piece of iron while the crucible bubbled orange light around them all. After the long dark of the vault, the workshop floor seemed to glow, even though it was dark outside. The air, heavy with ash and smoke, was sweeter than she'd ever tasted, and she stopped and closed her eyes, gulping it down.
"You're all right, Helwa's?" Barnard asked, not looking up from his work.
"Yes, Master Tinker," she said. "You're very kind to keep me here."
"Do you want for anything?"
"May I see my papa and mama now? Just for a little while?"
Barnard did stop hammering at that, set the heavy tool to rest beside the anvil.
"I'm sorry, Helwa's,"
I spoke to Sigir, and while the order's not on the road here, they're still in the valley and close by. Best to keep you close to your hiding spot in case they arrive. You'll see your parents as soon as it's safe.
Are they all right?
They're fine, Helwaz. May the Emperor judge me if I lie.
Her ears believed him, but her heart did not, and Helwaz knew that until she saw Samson whole and breathing, she would never be able to know, to truly know, that he lived. She was less frightened for her mother. It was her father the Order wanted. Or would they try to take her as a way to get to him? The thought made her stomach lurch.
May I just be alone for a bit?
I'll come with you, Basina began, but Barnard stopped her with a wave.
Leave her be, Barnard said. Stick close to the house, Helwaz. You can stay out until we get the crucible scraped and put down for the night. Then we'll come and get you.
Helwaz turned to go, but Barnard stopped her with a word.
Helwaz!
Yes, Master Tinker?
I can trust you not to go running off, can't I? I know you miss your parents, but there is a time to run and a time to wait, and now is for the waiting.
You can trust me, Master Tinker.
I believe I can.
Helwaz nodded and stepped out into the cool night air. If the workshop air had seemed sweet, the outside air was even better. She tilted her face up to the stars, feeling some of the worry lift from her. The moonlight washed the pebbles on the path to the common silver. She need only follow it to the green and across it to reach the mayor's house where her father hid. Did the mayor have him in his root cellar? Was Samson even now walking around Sigir's house, looking up at the same stars? Was he worried about her? She knew she would never make it there and back again in the time it would take the tinkers to get the crucible scraped. And it would take even longer to get to the Erbers to see her mother. The tinkers would understand, but they would be angry. Worse, she might bring danger to her parents, to all of them. If the order came, and Sigir or Deuteria were suddenly forced to hide her, too, and they were caught, what then? Besides, whether the order came or not, she had told Barnard Tinker that she would not go running off. And her father always said a man was nothing without his word. She wasn't a man, but she supposed the point held. Helwaz sighed and walked around the house, keeping close as Barnard had instructed. The wind picked up, setting the treetops to whispering, and Helwaz let the sound lull her as she walked, grateful for the feel of her legs stretching, the touch of the cool breeze raising goose flesh along the backs of her arms. Helwaz, the trees whispered to her as she rounded the back of the house, wind sighing in the branches.
Helwaz.
She froze. Not wind. Not trees.
Helwaz.
She whirled as a figure detached itself from the shadows of the wood came right toward her.
It's all right.
The moonlight fell across the figure just as she was about to scream and run, outlining an old man, tall and thin, hard as cured leather. Silver light pooled in the corners of his eyes as they crinkled into a smile.
It's all right. It's me.
Claudio. How did you find me?
Shh. Keep your voice down. I'm not supposed to be here. Sigir told me to leave the valley, but I had to make sure my favorite factors were all right first.
Sigir? Have you seen my father?
I have. He's well, Helwaz. Worried, but well. He told me you'd be here.
Claudio, the order came. They're looking for you.
I know, puppet. I know. Don't you worry. I've made a life staying one step ahead of the order. They'll not find me unless I want finding.
She raced to him, throwing her arms around him. He smelled of leather and leaf mold, of sweat and hard travel.
of safety and home. Oh, it's so good to see you,
Clodio. Sagira's right that it's not safe for you here, but I'm still glad you came.
I never got the chance to close the deal with your father, Clodio said, stroking her hair. Can't go far until things are settled with that.
Helwaz hugged him tighter. After all the talk of death and hiding, she was grateful for smaller, safer topics.
You think he'll buy your wares?
Your father's satisfied, Clodio said. He may cross his arms and draw storm clouds on his brow, but the truth is I could sell him his own boots if I'd a mind. He's lucky I owe him for watching my back in the war. He'll take all of the rind and be sending me back to the desert for more, mark me.
I mark you, Helwaz said. Clodio set a hand on her shoulder.
You must be terrified, Helwaz. You put on a very brave face.
She shrugged. I don't see what else I can do.
In times like these, Clodio said, most men and women grown alike act the fool. You're a woman grown and no mistake.
You're sure you're well?
Well enough, I suppose.
You don't sound well, Helwaz.
They're hiding me in the vault, Clodio. It's tiny and dark, and there's nothing to do. Basina comes once in a while, but mostly I'm alone.
Clodio smiled sadly. I wish I could stay with you. I wish I could take you with me, but life on the road is hard.
The Kipti manage it, Helwaz said.
The Kipti carry their homes on carts. Rangers sleep out under the weather with the birds and the beasts for company.
Helwaz nodded. She hadn't known that she even wanted to go with Clodio until he had raised the possibility, and the refusal now seemed to snatch even that hope away from her. Clodio slowly opened his pouch, thrusting a hand inside.
I have something for you.
What is it?
Clodio drew his hand out of the bag. Nestled in his palm was a small gray mouse. It crouched in his palm as if it were a second home, rubbing its tiny paws together under its twitching pink nose. Its ears were a bit long, its tail a bit short, but otherwise it looked like any of a dozen of the creatures that her mother was forever chasing out of the house.
I found him foraging in my bags. Each morning I ran him off. The next morning, there he was again. After a while, I just couldn't bring myself to let him go. He's been traveling with me for at least a fortnight now.
And you're giving him to me?
Clodio nodded.
To watch over you.
Helwaz felt like she was two people at once. The Helwaz, whose heart was swelling at Clodio's kindness, and the Helwaz, who was annoyed at being treated like a baby. It was a mouse. It couldn't watch over anyone.
Stop it, she thought. Clodio is the kindest person you know besides Basina. He's just being sweet.
Her cheeks burned with shame, and she reached out for the mouse.
I'm living in the vault here, Clodio. I have no way to care for him.
Oh, he can look after himself. He's an independent mouse. He was always scampering off when I was on the range, but every morning he'd be back in my pouch, sure as the sun rose.
But how will I feed him?
He is a field mouse, Helwaz. A ranger like me, he will feed himself.
The mouse stood up on his hind legs and faced Helwaz, tiny nose sniffing the air, little black eyes fixing on her. His gaze was so intent and earnest that Helwaz couldn't help but laugh.
What shall we name him? Clodio asked. He is your mouse now, so you should do the honors.
Helwaz looked at the little trembling body, considered.
I will call him Twitch.
Clodio nodded.
A good name for a good mouse.
You're sure I can have him?
I am. A ranger's life can be hard, even on a mouse.
He would be much happier with a warm hearth and a little girl who truly loves him. There's no hearth in the vault. He won't be in the vault forever. She reached out tentatively, and Twitch strained to reach her, stretching up on his tiny legs, short tail poked out for balance.
Does he bite?
Yes, Clodio said, but not you. Never you.
Twitch jumped onto her hand. His claws raised goose flesh as he scampered up her arm to her shoulder and down the side of her dress, vanishing inside the pocket at the front of her skirt. She reached into it to ensure he was there, stroked the soft fur between the ears with her finger. His whiskers tickled as he turned to sniff at her, but Clodio was as good as his word, and he didn't bite her. Helwes knew that Twitch couldn't really watch over her, but she had to admit, with the mouse in her pocket, she did feel safer.
Thank you.
He'll look after you now. The Emperor knows he'll do a better job of it than I ever could.
She hugged Clodio again, careful to keep her pocket well away.
I'm so glad you're back, Clodio.
As am I, my dear,
Clodio said, his voice thick.
Now run along, or Barnard will be wise to our little meeting, and I'll never hear the end of it. I'll check in on you in a fortnight or so. All will be well, Helwes. You'll see.
Helwes didn't want him to go, but the feel of Twitch's soft fur under her thumb helped give her courage. She gave him a final hug, not speaking for fear that she would cry again, and then she began her slow circuit of the house as Clodio's shape dwindled in the darkness behind her. The stars wheeled overhead, and the trees resumed their whispering, and she was alone again.
No, not alone.
You'll watch over me, won't you?
She found herself whispering to the mouse in her skirt pocket, even though it made her feel silly. Chapter 9 Found. From Writ Imp, Chapter 3, Verse 1. Hell slithers like the snake and burns like the salamander. Hell bites like the winter and the blade alike. From this font the wizard drinks, and as the wolf pup shall gnaw on the innards of the dead, surely it so gnaws upon the soul of the man, until he is consumed and the portal open within him. Helwes said nothing of Clodio's visit or of his gift. Keeping secrets made for a troubled sleep, she woke in the night when fumbling her way over to the sack of candles. Her one hand felt Twitch, still nestled in her pocket. The other brushed the old stub of her candle and found it cold. She felt around for the sparkstone and the metal striker, set to sparking them together. She froze mid-strike, listening. Shouting. Loud enough to be heard through the thick bronze, men's voices raised in anger. They came louder and more frequent, though the metal door prevented her from making out the actual words. She recognized Barnard's voice, his son's, a woman's, probably Chinsia's. Other men, one of whom sounded familiar. Barnard's voice coming closer, still yelling, she could make out some of his words now.
Of course not! Solid metal it is. Impossible!
Helwes backed away from the door, waiting to hear the iron key rattling in the lock, the tumblers turning. Instead, she heard a knock, then another, and another. Three knocks. Danger.
See? Solid metal, Barnard said.
The familiar man's voice said something she couldn't hear.
I will not, Barnard shouted. Only the procurer may look inside.
More shouting. Helwes looked frantically around, seeing nothing in the inky black. Was there anywhere to hide? She searched her memory of the space when it had been lit. Her heart pounded, her breath coming so fast it was hard to think. The racks on the walls were shallow, the unfinished works lining them not big enough to hide behind. The corners were bare. The only things in the tight space were the war machines. Helwa's bent, scooping up her blankets, pot, food, and candles, and climbing into one of the war machines. She tucked her supplies behind her and threw the blanket over one of the rods in the frame, letting it drape in front of her body before shoving her arms into the metal sleeves just as the iron key rattled in the lock and the door swung open. Barnard still yelling behind it.
"The Procurer will hear of this, Holy Brother," Barnard was saying. "It will not go unpunished."
"You are a villager."
The familiar voice was clear now. It was Brother Tone. Helwas could see the outline of his head and shoulders through the weave of the blanket. There were more with him.
"You do not deal in punishment, but I do. And the punishment I will mete out on that factor will make hell itself seem gentle."
Barnard looked inside, and Helwas peeked out from beneath a corner of the blanket just enough to see the shock on his face. He had surely thought they were all doomed.
"Well, as you can see, there's naught in here save the Imperial commissions, which are supposed to be a secret from all, even you, Holy Brother."
The light from the workshop came in behind Tone, so that she could see the grim set of his mouth, but not the zealous blazing of his blue eyes.
"I decide what is secret and what is not here, villager."
Tone looked up at the machine, and Helwas felt as if he could see through the blanket. She stayed frozen, not daring to move, not daring to breathe. Tone looked around, eyes sweeping the racks and floor, his face satisfied until he looked up at the racks in the center.
"What are these?"
"Armor?"
Tone asked.
"War engines," Barnard answered.
"And more than you should see."
"I may see whatever I like when I am about the Emperor's business," Tone snapped. "Those blades look sharp on both ends."
"They are, Holy Brother," Barnard answered. "The shorter end is the tang."
"Tang?
So they attach to this war engine?"
"To the fists, Lord, aye."
"Extraordinary," Tone said. "What is the blanket covering?"
"Me," thought Helwas, her lungs beginning to burn from holding her breath. Had Tone already found her father, her mother? Her eyes were dry from staring, tears starting to form at the corners, but Helwas didn't blink.
"No movement," she thought, "not a breath. He must not see you."
Barnard stuttered for half a moment as he saw the blanket and likely guessed what lay behind it.
"The Tinker engine, Lord. You've seen them before. They contain the seed stone that drives all such works. They must be kept dry, and even drafts carry water. A blanket suffices in here. If I were to move it, I'd use salted cloth."
Over Tone's shoulder, the workshop doors were flung wide. She saw a tiny white shape dart past them, tow-colored hair flying back from its shoulders.
Basina.
Helwas had to stifle the urge to cry out to her. Her best friend raced through the workshop doors and vanished into the night.
Where was she going?
To warn Sigir? The sentries would have sounded the alarm if the order approached. He should already be warned. Tone shifted his flail to his shoulder and stroked his chin.
"Still, it must be enormous. Let me have a look."
He stepped into the darkness of the vault, and Helwas had to stifle a scream.
"Holy Brother!" Barnard shouted, snatching Tone's arm. "I could lose my head for allowing anyone to set foot in here." "You will lose your head if you do not take your hands off me at once!"
Tone shouted back, shaking his arm loose and reaching with his free hand for the blanket over Helwas. Horses whinnied outside the workshop doors, and Helwas heard the pounding of hooves against stone and earth. Tone turned, his flail head bouncing on his shoulder. One of the other pilgrims was already racing out the door.
He looked outside, turned back to Brother Tone. "The horses are gone, holy brother."
Tone turned back to Barnard. "Don't think that I don't know what's happening here, Tinker." Barnard bowed. "Forgive me, holy brother. Might be my hitching post is rotten."
"As rotten as your traitorous heart. If those animals are not found, it will come out of your skin."
"I will send my sons to help you look for them, Lord. They won't go far. Horses go to where there's grazing, and the best is on the common green."
"You had better be right," Tone said. He gave a final, long look at the vault. "Those really are extraordinary machines, Tinker. You do good work."
"Thank you, holy brother."
Barnard bowed again as Gunnar and Guntar raced out of the workshop doors, lighting torches as they went. Tone swept out after them, his gray cloak swirling around his feet as he disappeared around the workshop doors, bolt and blade barking fit to wake the dead, following behind. Barnard went to the threshold, hand on the heavy wood, looking out into the night, no doubt making sure Tone was gone. At long last, he hung his head and sighed. Only then did Heloise take a gasping breath, her vision going gray as she suddenly realized how hungry for air she had been, how badly the blanket had itched her face, caused sweat to run down her back. Barnard winced at the sound of her gulping air, looked back out the door, then turned back to her.
"You're fortunate he didn't hear that," he said.
"Is he gone?" she asked, throwing off the blanket and clambering down from the machine.
"For now."
"I never thought he would make me open the vault."
"These damned pilgrims are only pious when it suits their needs."
"I think Basina spooked their horses."
"She did, brave girl. He'd have found you for certain otherwise."
"What about Papa? Mama?"
"I will go and see. But I don't think he found them either. Tone would have enjoyed that too much to keep it quiet."
"Please," Heloise gasped, feeling her stomach tighten again. She couldn't bear not knowing if her parents were alive. "You have to find out and tell me."
Barnard knelt and ran a trembling hand through her hair.
"I promise I will, Heloise, but it won't help anyone if they come back and you're found. We have to close the vault door now."
And suddenly, Heloise was frightened again, as if she had used all the courage in her on keeping still when Brother Tone came into the vault and reached for the blanket. She was so tired, so relieved now that the pilgrims had gone and the warm light of the workshop was spilling all around her. She couldn't bear to give it up again so soon, not before Basina came back. But Barnard was right, and after all Basina had done for her, the least she could do was be brave.
"All right," she began.
"She doesn't have to go back in," Sigir said. "Not for the moment, anyway."
The mayor stood in the workshop doorway, Gunnar and Guntar to either side. Heloise ran to him, hugging him around the waist. Sigir put his arm around her and held her close.
"There, there," he murmured.
"It's over now.
It's all right."
"Did you bring Papa?" she asked,
all thought of bravery gone.
"Please let me see him."
"Maybe tomorrow, Heloise," Sigir said. "They've gone for now, but they might come back." "The horses," Barnard began. "We're on the green, as you said, Father," Gunnar answered. "They mounted up and rode off as soon as they had them in hand."
"That was a brave, stupid thing you did, girl," Barnard said, as Basina appeared from behind Sigir, her skirts in her hand.
"I had to do it," she answered, head high. "He'd have found Heloise for sure."
"Tone's no fool," Barnard said. "He knows it was no rotten hitching post what led to them getting free."
We can only hope he thinks it's a child's prank and not some kind of subterfuge.
We'll know when he returns.
He may not return, Sigir said. He seemed convinced that Samson had run and taken his family with him.
Barnard snorted.
I did right, Papa, Basina said. You'd have done the same.
Barnard sighed, shook his head. Being a father means being frightened every damn day of your life. He turned to Sigir. We are betrayed.
Pock?
Or maybe salt?
Sigir shook his head.
You don't know that. Why else would Tone have wanted to look in the vault? Why would he even think?
No. Sigir cut him off with a wave of his hand. They spoke against Samson, but that is not the same as betraying him to his death. Tone is a beast, and a clever beast at that. He will not leave stones unturned in his search. If it hadn't been for your daughter, he might well have found one of the factors. We don't know that it was a villager what told him to look here.
Barnard shook his head. I don't like it.
There is nothing to like in any of this, Sigir agreed.
Thank you, Basina, Helwa said, reaching out an arm and gathering her best friend into a tight embrace. Basina hugged her back. You'd have done the same for me.
And I will, Helwa said with a sudden heat. I will never let anyone hurt you. If Tone comes back, I'll...
If Brother Tone returns, you will hide and keep quiet, Sigir said. That is the best way you can keep Basina safe, keep all of us safe.
Boys, Barnard said to his sons, go down to the sentry tower and make sure they're well down the road. I'll put Helwa's back to bed. I know you don't want to go back in the vault, girl, but there's nothing for it.
She felt Sigir stroke her hair, saw the mayor exchange a glance with Barnard.
They could come back, Barnard said. But there was no resolve in his voice. I know, Sigir said, looked down at Helwaz. But I cannot bear this. Putting a girl in a prison... I don't think they'll come back tonight, Barnard. I cannot bear it.
Nor I.
Barnard's voice was thick. I'll set the boys on watches. If the sentry fails to raise the alarm, they'll call out should the order return.
Will that be enough? Sigir asked.
Enough time to get her into the vault if she stays just outside the door.
There's the hounds, too.
Barnard jerked his thumb at Bolt and Blade, already lying across the entrance to the workshop, backs to them, eyes warily set on the darkness outside.
You mean I don't have to sleep inside?
Helwaz asked, a smile already straining her cheeks. Close to the door, Barnard said, and you sleep with one eye open. If riders do come, we'll need to get you inside as fast as a thought.
I'll stay with her, Basina said. You know how lightly I sleep.
Helwa's heart leapt at the thought. At last the reality of her hiding from the Order matched her dream of it, alone with Basina at night, sharing secrets. She reached into her pocket and felt Twitch there, his little pink nose brushing her thumb. Gunnar looked up, frowning.
Father, I'm not playing nursemaid to these two. You know how they get when they're...
You shut your mouth, Hammerhead, Basina said. I'm betrothed now, and never asked for your minding even when I was still a maid.
You are still a maid, Barnard laughed, and I am not eager to think of you otherwise, but you two will bed down here tonight, and the lads will keep watch outside. I can't sleep with a lot of you howling after one another. I've hounds for that work.
The boys looked as if they would protest, but went silent at a look from Barnard.
Yes, father. You want to be sentries? This is what sentries do. Gunnar, you'll take first watch at the well. Guntar will relieve you at a half candle. Yes, father. And keep an eye on Pock and Sald and everyone, Barnard said to Sigir.
You leave the village to me, Sigir said, as I leave tinkering to you.
Barnard met his gaze, but said nothing.
All right, Sigir said. I'd best return to Samson. He gave Helwaz a brief hug before letting her go. I'll send your father your love, he said. As soon as the order moves on, we'll have you together again. I promise.
Thank you, Mayor,
Helwaz said, and then the men left them and they were alone together, just her and Basina, and the scraped and cooling crucible casting a dull orange light over them both.
You saved me, Helwaz said,
felt how wide her eyes must have looked, how awed. Her belly tightened as she realized that she actually felt shy of herself before Basina, terrified she would say something stupid and ruin everything. That was silly, of course. She and Basina had been friends since they could walk. She was the same girl. She wasn't sure what to say, so instead Helwaz said,
You saved me.
Again. Basina smiled. She might have blushed, but it was impossible to tell in the crucible's red light. Chapter 10 Too Far, Too Fast. From Rit, Allah, Chapter 1, Verse 5. Mahesh pierced him with his spear, and the weapon stuck fast. With his left hand, the emperor did smite Mahesh on his crown, so that his head was cleaved in twain, and with his right, he drew the veil shut, sealing hell away forever, and died with a glad heart. Helwaz and Basina lay awake talking for the rest of the night. The hounds were dim lumps in the dull glow of the cooling fires, curled protectively in front of the doors and the people inside. Helwaz and Basina lay wrapped in blankets under the workbench. Basina giggled when Helwaz showed her twitch, and shrugged when she told her the mouse was a gift from Clodio.
"Promise you won't tell anyone?" Helwaz said.
"Why would I tell anyone?" Basina asked. "Rangers come and go as they please. Mice are everywhere. There's nothing to tell." Twitch scurried between them, nosing at Helwa's blanket, climbing over her hand.
"Oh, he is so darling," Basina said, reaching out a finger for him.
Twitch gave a high squeak, and Helwaz giggled, picking him up.
It's all right, she said. Basina is family.
Oh, stop, Helwaz. He's a mouse. He doesn't understand.
But Twitch was raising his body up, balancing with his tail as he had when Clodio had handed him to her. His tiny black eyes looked at Basina, nose twitching toward her.
See? Helwaz asked. He just needs some coaxing.
Basina drew back, eyes widening.
It's like he understands you.
Well, maybe he does. He's my mouse, after all. That's what Clodio said. Basina laughed and held out her hand. Helwaz coaxed the mouse forward with her thumb.
It's all right, Twitch. This is my best friend, Basina.
If you're watching over me, you're watching over her. Twitch looked over his shoulder at Helwaz, black eyes considering. She could almost believe he understood the words as he turned back. Both she and Basina waited, holding their breath, until Twitch finally crept forward and sat stiffly in Basina's palm, tiny pink nose hovering over her thumb.
It tickles, Basina giggled, and Helwaz felt as close to her as anyone in her life.
Of course she could share Twitch with Basina. Of course Basina would understand. Basina set Twitch to roam on the floor between them, but the mouse curled up in the folds of the blanket. Helwaz left him, screened by her back from any curiosity from Bolt and Blade. Helwaz propped her head on her arm, looking at her best friend. The gentle glow of the crucible softened Basina's lines, until she seemed to melt and shimmer like a setting sun. Helwaz could have looked at her forever. She didn't want to move, to speak, for fear that it would break the moment.
It seemed as if all the heat of the workshop had gathered in Helwa's belly and thighs, a wonderful melting feeling. Her head felt like it was about to float off her shoulders. Basina shifted, rolled onto her side, big eyes sleepy.
"What are you thinking about?"
"You," Helwaz said. "How you saved me."
"All I did was untie the horses and say boo at them a couple of times."
"It's more than that. You're special. Like a hero from the writ. I never heard of a woman doing something like that."
Basina laughed, making her so beautiful that Helwaz thought her heart would break.
"I'm not a woman yet. But I will be soon."
"You mean your husband?" Helwaz felt a spike of cold through the delicious heat in her belly. Basina nodded, and the cold spike sank deeper, driving the heat from her utterly. Helwaz grieved its loss, even as she tried to smile for her friend.
"They say it hurts," Basina said.
"At least, it does for girls who don't run or ride. I rode a horse once, and Mother says, because I run a lot, that..."
"Your mother talks to you about it?"
Helwaz asked.
"Who else?"
"She's born 3 children. She knows what she's about."
"My mama would never..."
"She only said that when the time comes, I'm to lie back and be as quiet as I can." "That doesn't sound nice at all," Basina frowned.
"It's not supposed to be nice."
Basina grit her teeth.
"It is.
Mother says that when you love someone, it's the most wonderful thing in the world, even if it does hurt at the start."
"And you love him?"
Helwaz tried to keep her voice from shaking. Failed. Basina didn't notice.
"He's strong, and he's kind.
He always calls me my lady, as if I were a princess.
I like the way he looks at me.
I think he would get good children."
"That's love, I suppose."
Helwaz didn't think love was something you should suppose. She was sure she loved Basina, sure in her bones and in her belly. She was sure that Basina was the most beautiful, the most wonderful person in the world, and that she would never love anyone else. More sure than she had ever been about anything in her entire life. That's what love should be, sure as stone, as running water. Sure as the bite of winter and spring blossoms. Sure even when it was impossible. Even when they were both girls.
And you'll be happy being married?
Why wouldn't I?
You know it'll be you soon. Aren't you just a little excited about it?
Helwaz thought about it. She knew she was supposed to be looking forward to her wedding day, to an honorable future as a wife and mother. But the thought of her mother, crouching under her wimple before the hearth, the same 4 walls about her day after day, made her sad and sick in equal measure.
"I don't know," Helwaz said slowly. "Sometimes I think maybe I don't want to keep a home."
"Why not?"
"I don't know. I like going with Papa on his rounds. I like going to Lee's on market days. I liked meeting the Kipti. I wouldn't want to stop doing that."
"With the right husband, you won't have to. Randall says I'll be able to rule the roost."
"Yes," Helwaz said. "But he still has to let you rule it."
Basina shrugged. "That's the writ. The Emperor's will, not ours. Anyway, I think you're just being contrary. I bet you'll love every bit of it. Even the running." Helwaz laughed at that, swatted at her.
"Stop!"
Basina smiled, and they were silent for a while. Finally, Basina spoke.
"I've never done anything, you know."
Basina's voice was small, shy. She sounded very much like Helwaz felt, a tiny thing
in a bigger world that had plans for her whether she liked it or not.
You never?
No! Basina sounded annoyed. I would never.